Restoration by Rena Oddish. The year before I began work in the research lab, there was an incident. Though it was rarely talked about, it was clear it had left its mark on everyone who had been there at the time. Those who remained in the lab were slower to trust. More defensive policies were instituted, as if human carelessness was assumed as a constant. Prior to even entering the lab, I had to complete a mandatory 2-day radiation safety course. The incident was palpable in the undercurrent of terseness in the physician's tone. It was encoded in the pitch of his voice when he told us we couldn't even begin to conceive of the long-term damage that could be caused by our potential negligence. That we didn't have the capacity to imagine the scope of the risk to the community if we failed to comply. The rules were there to protect us and the community from a potentially lethal and yet invisible threat. I accepted his assessment and vowed to adhere to all safety protocols, but the first time I turned on a Geiger counter, it visibly startled me. A graduate student in the lab appeared exhausted by my reaction and asked, "So, does all data frighten you?" I shook my head no, embarrassed by my lack of familiarity with what must have been so basic to the rest of the lab. "But the lab is seemingly so full of radiation," I said. She softened and explained how normal it was to have a steady click, click, click of background radiation. She demonstrated by taking me to a storage area within the lab and holding the sensor near a known radioactive substance what an alarming rate would sound like. The separate click, click, ticks accelerated and merged into an indistinguishable loud buzz. Recognizing the value of the tool's ability to clearly distinguish between normalcy and danger where I could not, I softened towards it. It was in that lab, encased in risk, that our interconnectedness was most apparent. Our collective ability to either prevent or cause harm was a deliberate daily choice. As we worked behind partitions and often in protective gear, I saw how even the briefest moment of inattention could cause damage. At first, I found the constant vigilance exhausting. Over time, my sense of overwhelm would be replaced by an appreciation of our collective cautiousness as a tacit expression of love. I would later learn that the incident a year prior involved a researcher in a neighboring lab. He had dropped a fraction of an ounce of radioactive material on the ground one morning and had not told anyone. He did not initiate any protocol. He had instead just turned off the humming metronome of isotopic decay and walked out of the lab. The reverberations of his action were both known and are still to this day unknowable. The cleanup by men in biohazard suits lasted for months. There were the tangible football field lengths of linoleum flooring that had to be taken up, carpeted floorboards of cars that had to be stripped, and a section of off-campus family housing that had become a biohazard site. There were rumors of contaminated toys already gummed by babies at the daycare before the Office of Nuclear and Regulatory Affairs took over. I thought about that moment of choice nearly every day that I worked in the lab. I would generate and project possible explanations onto him, although his true internal motivations could not be known. In one version, he understood the magnitude of the problem the moment the spill hit the ground and just couldn't face it. Something akin to an immediate paralyzing fear or shame rose up in him, and meant the only possible way forward was pretending it had never happened. Confronted with what was true, he chose exile. In another version, he believed he just needed time to think. He could fix it if he could think it through in quiet. He would take a walk and he would come back with a plan that would limit the scope of the damage. Here, he was well-intentioned, but ultimately ill-equipped to manage a crisis. The version I returned to the most was the one where he thought first of his family. He feared his exposure would impact his infant daughter, and in a wildly contradictory act, he rushed to pick her up from daycare. He believed so completely in his bodily ability to protect her. He was inured to the reality that his body carried the actual danger. Love as blindness. If the cleanup had been confined to the square foot of linoleum where it began, there would be little to say. Instead, there were hours and days in which the circumference of impact rippled and widened while nothing was done. The elapsing time meant that the number of people impacted by the damaging force expanded exponentially. They had neither the benefit of awareness nor the time to even attempt to protect themselves. I'll never know more than what can be inferred from the aftermath of his choice. I'll never know his true motivations, inner dialogue, fears, or rationalizations. I'll only ever have my own projections and a shared slice of the collective fabrications of my lab mates. I cannot tell his story, but I can learn from my experience of it and carry that forward. I've stared at the ripples of his wake long enough to glean something from the waves. So much time has passed now, and roles have changed, and my perspective has shifted. From where I now sit, I know it must have been incredibly difficult for those who lived through the initial incident, given that they were exposed to so much risk and uncertainty. I also know that at the time it was difficult for me to arrive as a novice to the aftermath of their collective trauma. It was challenging to have had my early years of training circumscribed by grief and a resignation that bordered on apathy. The trainees joining our teams now, amidst our ongoing devastation, know this story. They are so perceptive and attuned to what we do and don't say out loud. How we choose to talk about this time, the shape we decide to press our stories into, the tone we use to share them, can be a doorway into a shared space. And it may be in that clearing created with our words that we find communion and a kind of nascent restoration.